one soul ring.
I guess I did do it a little funny. I didn't mean to. That wasn't intentional, but I guess I know. I understand Eric's plight now. What he has to...
It was funny because he went 3, 2,
record.
One.
Yeah.
Record.
Yeah, poor Eric. All right, well, yeah, we're back. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is Turn One Soul Ring. I'm Kevin.
And I'm Riley.
And today on the show, we're starting our set review of Innistrad Crimson Vow, which by the time this episode comes out is... I'm sure it's going to be released on Arena. I think the release date for this set is November 19th. But that's in paper. So they usually do it a week before. I'm pretty sure. Anyways, if you're familiar with our set reviews, then you know they're not exhaustive. We cover the cards we're interested in playing with in the formats that we play. We're going to go through the cards in Wooburg order, as usual, wrapping things up with the gold, colorless, and land cards. So without any further ado... Our first white card is By Invitation Only. It's 3 white-white for a sorcery. Choose a number between 0 and 13. Each player sacrifices that many creatures. So I love a board wipe that gets around... I love any board wipe, but I love board wipes that get around Indestructible and Regenerate. Less of a problem, generally speaking, Regenerate. But I think... To me, this seems a little like restrictive, the 0 to 13, and then each player sacrifices that many creatures. But I feel like, how often does anybody have 13 creatures on the board that isn't running a token strategy? So I think even as the game progresses, this card is most of the time going to be a sure thing in terms of a board wipe. But I was thinking that if you were running a token strategy, you can use this as a one-sided board wipe. But in that scenario, might be more of a win more card. So,
yeah, and I like the flexibility as well, right? Like giving you the chance, say, like if you are running a token strategy and have a wider board than most anybody else, you can choose whichever number you want, essentially. Like you don't have to go all the way up to 13. So if you've got a slightly wider board than the next player, you can definitely make it a little bit more one-sided. Yeah, feels a little black, though, like making people sacrifice that many creatures. I guess there's like Tragic Arrogance and cards like that that do the sacrifice thing. But
yeah. Well, maybe they're just trying to give white a little bit more latitude when it comes to power level. I don't know. Maybe some card draw without any questions asked. That would be nice once in a while.
Well, there's a few card draw engines in the set, but they make you jump through hoops. Yeah. So I guess we'll get to those soon.
Yeah. Next up is our first transform card today. It's Faithbound Judge on the front side. It's 1 white-white for a 4/4 spirit soldier. It has defender, flying, and vigilance. And at the beginning of your upkeep, if Faithbound Judge has 2 or fewer judgment counters on it, put a judgment counter on it. And then, as long as it has 3 or more judgment counters on it, it can attack as though it didn't have defender. And it has disturb, of course, for 5 white-white. So if a card is in your graveyard and it has disturb, you can cast it for its disturb cost, and it enters the battlefield on its flip side. And the flip side of this card is Sinner's Judgment. It's an aura that enchants a player. At the beginning of your upkeep, put a judgment counter on it. Then if there are 3 or more judgment counters on it, enchanted player loses the game. And of course, if it would be put into a graveyard from anywhere, exile it instead. So the front side of this card isn't really anything I'm interested in. I think it's cool, but the backside is really what I'm a fan of. I like cards that have alternate win conditions, and I especially like cards that can snipe a player out of the game, especially in a Voltron strategy. That's something that I'm fond of. But you know, it kind of reminds me also of overwhelming Splendor, but it's not unfun the way Splendor is, and it still allows the enchanted player to play the game, and it gives people, it's not broken, you know, it gives people time, even that player's opponents, to get rid of this thing. So I think it puts a fun little timer on things, and in a Voltron strategy, sometimes you need that alternate win condition to take out everybody at the table, because once you get that, you know, 21 plus creature on the battlefield, everyone starts trying to kill you. So, you know, like, I'll run things like Approach of the Second Sun or Overwhelming Splendor or a card like this, just because, you know, sometimes you need cards like this doing the work of eliminating your opponents from the table in that strategy.
Yeah, and I agree. Like, the front side, especially in Commander, is not too exciting. You're basically getting, like, a 4-4 that can attack in, like, three turns from now. So that's nothing too exciting, even if it is only 3 mana. But if you're in, like, an Enchantress build or some sort of Reanimator build, and you can pitch this or mill it over or find another way to get it into your graveyard, I think that's where it's going to be pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And I definitely agree, like, having that little mini game for 3 extra turns where it's like, you know, you better deal with it or you're dead. That's pretty cool, because then you can start making deals or finding ways of getting it off. Mm-hmm. That's not like just immediately going to destroy somebody.
Yeah. Yeah. They have time. And sort of, yeah, it's sort of like, it sort of also kind of feels like Felidar Sovereign, you know, when that person gets up to 60 life and it's like, well, you had a go around to deal with this, everybody. Now I win.
Yeah. Yeah.
Next up is Fleeting Spirit. It's 1W for a 3/1 spirit. You can pay a white to exile 3 cards from your graveyard, and it gains first strike until end of turn. And you can also discard a card, exile Fleeting Spirit, return it to the battlefield under its owner's control at the beginning of the next end step.
Yeah, I included this one specifically for that second ability, that discard ability. I just figured there's not too many cheap, like in this case, a 2-mana card that just has like a free discard outlet attached to it, especially in white. So if you're running like a white-based Reanimator strategy, this is a pretty clean way of getting a card into your graveyard. Even if it is just flickering itself, but
yeah,
I really don't care about the evasion.
and it kind of makes me think that you mentioned that. It kind of makes you think of that. It was like red, white, black. That from Commander Legends. That legend that cared about reanimating enchantments.
Yeah,
and we did talk about that. That, you know, even in those colors, having things like this that, you know, are efficient and could let you discard those enchantments, those high cost enchantments, mm-hmm. that you'd want to reanimate. So this might fit into a deck like that perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
Do not remember what that creature was called though.
It's like Gen,
yes.
Weaver of Secrets or something. Like that.
Yeah, Weaver of something. Next up is Hopeful
or Arcanum Weaver.
Maybe that was it. Okay, next up we have Hallowed Haunting. It's 2W for an enchantment. As long as you control 7 or more enchantments, creatures you control have flying and vigilance. And whenever you cast an enchantment spell, create a white spirit cleric creature token with this creature's power and toughness are each equal to the number of spirits you control. So I put this on the list because I think it's perfect as, you know, an offensive and defensive tool in an Enchantress build, mm-hmm. especially that Riley, you had piloted a new build recently, an Enchantress mm-hmm. build, and you were just making a lot of tokens, and this card made me think of that deck. The only catch with this though is that you need that first spirit to get the engine going, so. You know, if it was like equal to the number of enchantments you control, well, then it'd be perfect. You just start making beefy spirits.
Yeah.
But that might be too good. But yeah, this I could see a card like this in a deck like that where you're using all those enchantment synergies to make tokens. This is it's a fun. Oh, and it's a mythic. Oh boy. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree, and it curves well into Divine Visitation, which is what that deck is kind of trying to do. It's putting all those kind of like Johnny's Chosen, or there's that Pegasus Archon thing that spits out Pegasus.
Yeah, or there's there's that one that spit. It's like Sanctum of something. It spits out like 2/2s.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, yeah, there's quite a few of those.
Yeah, so just like anything that cares about casting enchantments and creating tokens, that's what that deck is all about. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I have, what is it? The Harvest Hand. Harvest Hand.
Sithis? Yeah, from Sithis, Modern Horizons 2. Next up is Hopeful Initiate. It's 1W for a 1/2 human warlock. It has training, so this is our first card with training. Whenever this creature attacks with another creature with power greater, put a 1/1 counter on this creature. And then you can pay 2W, remove 2 +1/+1 counters from among creatures you control, destroy target artifact or enchantment. Another warlock for your warlock tribal builds, everybody.
Yeah, your white-based warlock tribal.
They're doing 5-color warlocks with Morophon as the commander.
There you go. We're getting there. No, but this is kind of cool. I don't know if I would be particularly interested in this for the training ability, just because a 1/2 that upgrades into a 2/3 in commander is like not too special. But if you're running a +1/+1 counters deck where you're moving around counters and looking for ways to use those counters, like, this is a pretty cool repeatable enchantment artifact destruction ability.
Mm-hmm. Ullenbach Escort is next. It's 1W for a 1/1 human cleric with vigilance, and you can sacrifice it to have target creature you control with a 1/1 counter on it gain lifelink and indestructible until end of turn.
Yeah, just a selfless savior effect for your +1/+1 counter strategies.
Mm-hmm. Voice of the Blessed is next. It's 2W for a 2/2 spirit cleric. Whenever you gain life, put a 1/1 counter on it. And as long as Voice of the Blessed has 4 or more 1/1 counters on it, it has flying and vigilance. Then, as long as it has 10 or more 1/1 counters on it, it has indestructible. So that last line of text, I don't think is going to happen too terribly often, but maybe in like a commander deck that Trevor's piloting, I could see that happening.
Yeah, just a Soul Sister.
Just like love and life gain, that guy. So I was really considering this for Modern Soul Sisters, because oftentimes with that deck, you'll drop a Martyr of Sands or a Soul Sister on turn one. So if you turn one Soul Sister, turn two Voice of the Blessed, it's already a 3/3. And then you could turn three, drop another Soul Sister and something else. Maybe another Soul Sister, maybe a Martyr of Sands, whatever. Maybe an Ajani's Pride Mate. Anyways, then Voice of the Blessed has 4 counters on it, and it's a 6/6 with flying and vigilance on turn three. So I think I'm going to give it a try, but I'm really not sure what to cut for it.
Yeah. Yeah, I know Soul Sisters cares a lot about one drops, mm-hmm. just with like Ranger, Captain of Eos. But this is, I mean, as far as the Johnny's Pride Mates go, this is a pretty strong payoff for a Pride Mate effect.
Yeah, for sure. So, I did pick up a playset, and we'll see what happens.
There you go.
Next up, we have another transform card. It's Wedding Announcement. It's 2W for an enchantment on the front side. At the beginning of your end step, put an invitation counter on Wedding Announcement. If you attacked with 2 or more creatures this turn, draw a card. Otherwise, create a 1/1 white human creature token. Then, if Wedding Announcement has 3 or more invitation counters on it, transform it. Flip side is Wedding Festivity, another enchantment. Creatures you control get +1/+1.
So, I mean, Phyrexian Arena is kind of like a staple in Commander, but not necessarily one that I think is, you know, as favored as it is today. Or, sorry, not as favored anymore as it once was.
Yeah, yeah.
You know sure. what I mean? Like that it's very slow card draw.
Yeah.
So this kind of gives me like Phyrexian Arena vibe plus like an Anthem effect as a payoff. So I think if you exactly want that Anthem effect, you know, having some incidental card draw, incidental creatures being created, like that might be cool. But it's just a classic white card draw effect that you have to like jump through several hoops to get a slight payoff.
Yeah, and we like to point those out because it doesn't feel great.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, yeah, I think if you want every part of this card, that's exactly where you want it. But like, I don't think I want to be jumping through hoops just to like wind up with an Anthem effect at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's I agree. Our last white card today is Welcoming Vampire. It's 2W for a 2/3 vampire with flying, and whenever one or more other creatures with power 2 or less enters the battlefield under your control, draw a card. And of course, this ability triggers only once each turn.
God forbid it's too powerful.
I mean, if it didn't have that last line of text, I'd probably try that. I'd probably put this in my Arcades deck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it feels a lot like a Bygone Bishop, but the nice thing about Bygone Bishop is it triggers more than once each.
Yeah, game, exactly.
If you can make it.
Yeah.
But of course, you don't have to pay two to crack a clue to draw the card. Mm-hmm. So overall, you know, if I'm looking for a flyer, if I'm looking for a vampire in white, if I'm looking for just some more incidental card draw, like this card's going to be a role player, mm-hmm. and I'd definitely be happy running it. But it's not over the top by any means.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, with the old Edgar Markov decks and the new ones that are already starting to spring up, where you're just making tokens for free, if you know, mm-hmm. with your commander, this card's going to be this. It's like free card draw once a turn, but still.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Okay, moving on to blue. Our first blue card is Cemetery Illuminator. It's one blue for a 2/3 spirit with flying. And whenever it enters the battlefield or attacks, exile a card from a graveyard. You may look at the top card of your library anytime, and once each turn, you may cast a spell from the top of your library if it shares a card type with a card exiled with Cemetery Illuminator. That's a lot.
It's a lot for a minor effect, but it's like a build your own Farsight. Is it Farsight?
Future sight. Yeah.
Future sight. Yeah. A build your own future sight on a 2/3 flying body. But I think overall, like 3 mana, 2/3 flyer. If you care about having a 2/3 flyer spirit, or any combination of those in between, I think you'd be happy playing this card just for its incidental graveyard hate. Like, I think I like the direction Wizards is going with making graveyard hate a little bit more incidental.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, I mean, the graveyard is such a powerful zone. Like, there's so many things you can do with it. Like flashback, reanimator, you name it. And just having that off chance where this becomes a source of card advantage, that's pretty cool. I don't think you're going in with the intent that you're going to, like, turn this into a future sight every time, but rather it's going to be, like, a solid role player that incidentally hates, you know, flashback cards or juicy reanimator targets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, like a scavenging ooze kind of card. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's really smart what they've done with these two sets, like these two Innistrad sets and the decks that they released with them. And I suppose you could say the same for the Strixhaven decks, the commander set we got in 2021. But I think these decks in particular, because we didn't review the Innistrad Midnight Hunt commander decks, and honestly, I haven't taken a good look at them, but we're going to, you know, in the next few weeks, we're going to be talking about the commander decks that were released along with Crimson Vow, and those are tribal decks. One's a vampire deck, one's a spirit deck. So, you know, as a way to maybe purposefully, maybe incidentally increase the price of singles from this standard set, because players are going to want to put these new cards in their new tribal commander decks, I think that was a really good move. We'll see what actually happens, because with collector's packs, you know, the price of singles in general has been taking a hit. And I think, Riley, you would agree that we both like that kind of thing, because we don't want to pay more for singles.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it just seems like a good move with at least the Crimson Vow decks. But
yeah, and I imagine the intent was, like, with Commander Precons, they're kind of geared towards new players. So having the main set include cards that you kind of want to upgrade those decks with is a really smart way to introduce new players to upgrading their deck, right? So it just kind of lines up perfectly.
Yeah, now all they have to do is start putting like 2 or 3 booster packs in with the sealed commander decks, like they used to do with like Planeswalker awesome. Decks. Yeah. And it's like, hey, here's a little something, and you can upgrade your deck a little bit.
Yeah, that'd be perfect. Yeah,
because they're already charging more, so they should give us more. You know, I just think that's fair.
Exactly.
Next up is Consuming Tide. It's 2 blue-blue for a sorcery. Each player chooses a non-land permanent they control. Return all non-land permanents not chosen this way to their owner's hands. Then you draw a card for each opponent who has more cards in their hand than you do. So it's a 4-mana board wipe. That's fantastic. That's what we always want. But I love blue board wipes in general, and I think this is a really nice spin on that blue board wipe style, because your opponents aren't going to be too angry that you just bounce their boards because you let them keep their best non-land permanent and you get to draw some cards. It kind of has like an Arcane Denial feel. Like, no one cares if they get countered with Arcane Denial because they're like, I get to draw 2 cards, no big deal, right? I'm right, right?
Well, they don't get they don't get to draw cards. It's only you that gets to
draw cards. No. I know, but yes, I was just sort of relating it to Arcane Denial. No, but they do get to keep their best thing.
Yeah, I think overall people prefer having things bounce their hand rather than sent to the graveyard.
Yeah.
But either way, from my perspective, if somebody's bouncing my board, I'm not totally thrilled.
Yeah, of course. Of course not.
At least I got to keep one thing on the battlefield of my choosing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, that's the only risk with this card is it doesn't get everything. Yeah. So if somebody does have, like, a single permanent that's a clear threat, they're going to choose that card to keep around.
Mm-hmm.
So a little limited in that sense, but it's nice that you potentially get a little bit of card draw from this as well. So,
yeah, I think most times it's probably going to replace itself, because are you going to be bouncing all the non-land permanents if you're in a situation where, you know, you're board, like where you're in the lead, so to speak. So mm-hmm. I think a lot of the times just on board, someone else is going to have card advantage over you. So I think at the very least it'll replace itself. I don't know if I'm going to put it in any decks, because you know, I'm more of a fan of like Evacuation, which is like instant speed.
Yeah.
Or there's like Aetherize and Aether Spouts. I prefer those cards because they're instant speed.
Yeah,
but this being 4 mana is nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's a ton of options to choose from. Mm-hmm. So,
oh yeah, Geralf Visionary Stitcher is next. He's Geralf. Anyways,
I think Drolf. I don't know.
So, whatever he's called, he's 2 and a blue for a 1/4 legendary human wizard. Zombies you control have flying, and you can pay a 1 blue and tap it. Sacrifice another non-token creature. Create an XX blue zombie creature token, where X is the sacrificed creature's toughness.
I mean, flying zombies, that's all I need, right?
Yeah, that's... I mean, how do you make zombies more scary? They fly.
Yeah. I don't know. It's always nice to have more tools for zombies. I think zombies is, like, traditionally a very fun tribe.
Mm-hmm.
And just giving them evasion and then giving you like a little sacrifice outlet, I think Geralf is just a pretty strong role player. Unfortunately, not a zombie himself, though.
Nope. He's not a zombie, right? Because he's...
I know, I'm just saying. If he was a zombie, then it'd be a slam dunk.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because he's a 1/4. If he could sacrifice himself, that would at least net you a 4/4. That would be nice.
Yeah.
Okay, next up we have Hullbreaker Horror. It's 5 blue-blue for a 7/8 Kraken Horror with Flash. This spell can't be countered, and whenever you cast a spell, choose up to 1. Return target spell you don't control to its owner's hand, or return target non-land permanent to its owner's hand. I like that unsubstantiate effect. It's rare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what's the other big dork that... it's like Tide Spout Tyrant or something like that?
Yes. Yep.
The one that bounces permanents?
Yeah, whenever you cast a spell. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's got those vibes. I don't, like, it's a flash, huge threat that can't be countered. So, if you're playing kind of like a control strategy or more like a spell slinger strategy, then, like, that first bullet point is going to come up a little bit more often than if you were playing like a like a Leviathan tribal or like a Kraken tribal kind of commander deck. But I'm sure you can build it in a way that this is going to be like a pretty strong threat that's going to help control the game.
Inspired Idea is next. It's 2 and a blue for a sorcery. It has Cleave for 3 blue-blue, and you can draw 3 cards. And then in parentheses, your maximum hand size is reduced by 3 for the rest of the game. So, Riley, can you explain cleave to, well, me and everybody else?
So, cleave, it's a little bit like,
Overload?
Overload. That's the one. So, it's an alternative cost. It's not an additional cost. It says, you may cast the spell for its cleave cost. If you do, remove the words in the square brackets. So honestly, this this mechanic is pretty clunky from like a design perspective, at least in my eyes. I don't like the square brackets and the whole like, you know, having to reread line and the rules text to figure out what the hell is going on. Whereas like Overload is, you know, it's replace each instance of target with each, right?
Yeah.
So that one's a little bit more straightforward. That being said, I guess the important thing about cleave is that if you were to cast the spell for free from like another zone that wasn't your hand, like if you're not choosing to cast it for its cleave cost, you have to pay its regular cost and use its regular text. But this card in this case, if you were to pay for its cleave cost, you would just draw 3 cards. So it'd be 3 blue blue for drawing 3 cards. Or if you're paying for its normal cost, you would draw 3 cards and then your maximum hand size is reduced by 3. So,
and
a little bit confusing, but...
Yeah, yeah. And it's interesting you make that comparison to Overload, because not that I find Overload a, you know, unintuitive or confusing mechanic, but it does ask you to kind of visualize what the text would look like when you pay the mm-hmm. Overload cost, whereas this... it's laid out right in front of you and you don't have to do that visualizations. And I think for some people, you know, that like this kind of, the way this is laid out is easier. Whereas for some people, you know, the Overload cost where it's actually physically not laid out what it says on the card, if you pay the Overload mm-hmm. cost. So yeah, it's just kind of an interesting, little idiosyncrasy. So anyways,
yeah.
About this card though, you know, 3 blue, draw 3 cards is fantastic. Of course, your hand size is reduced by 3 for the rest of the game. So it's your maximum hand size becomes 4, which is a disadvantage. But I think if you're in like a discard strategy or a graveyard strategy where you want to be pitching a lot of cards, I think it's an advantage running a card like that in those decks.
Yeah, for sure. I think there's definitely a way where you can make this card kind of work to your advantage overall. And I mean, draw 3 for 3, like that's an awesome rate. Mm-hmm. Obviously that turn, like if you're not able to utilize those cards, you're likely going to be discarding down to hand size, which is now 4. But like you said, like if you're in a discard strategy or like reanimator strategy, maybe that is to your advantage.
And would like a Reliquary Tower effect supersede this?
Yeah.
Okay. So
so you have no maximum hand
size. Just do that, so, or that 2 mana artifact that also does it.
Yeah. Infinity minus 3 is still infinity.
Thought Vessel. That's what I was thinking of. Okay. Next up, we have another transform card. It's Jacob Hawken Inspector on the front side. It's 1 and a blue for a 0/2 legendary human advisor. Tap it to draw a card, then exile a card from your hand face down. You may look at that card for as long as it remains exiled, and you may pay 4 blue blue. If you do, transform Jacob Hawken Inspector. And the other side is a legendary enchantment, Hawken's Insight. At the beginning of your upkeep, exile the top card of your library face down. You may look at the top card of your library for as long as it remains exiled. And once during each of your turns, you may play a land or cast a spell from among the cards exiled with this permanent without paying its mana cost.
This guy's pretty cool. I mean, it's not quite a looter, so I wouldn't want to necessarily run it in a strategy that wants kind of a looting effect, because on its front side, it's sending those cards to exile. Mm-hmm. But itself, like, I mean, it's a 2 mana card that's going to be getting you some like card filtering, and in the end it's almost like a safe omniscience
yeah.
that gets you a little bit of card advantage.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Pretty cool overall.
Mm-hmm. Okay, next we have another transform card. It's Lantern Bearer on the front side. It's one blue for a 1/1 spirit with flying and disturb for 2 and a blue. So if you cast it from your graveyard for its disturb cost, it's Lantern's Lift. It's an aura, enchants a creature. And enchanted creature gets +1/+1 and has flying. And like all disturb cards, if it would be put into a graveyard from anywhere, exile it instead. So just another flying man for flying men and another 1/1 flyer for Edric. And with its disturb ability, giving it a little bit of extra utility, I'm sure that those of us with those builds aren't going to have any problem cutting something for this spirit. And, you know, in those builds, ideally you're looking at the front side, but... I guess you could give, like, if Edric's your commander, you could give him flying if he hasn't already been soul-bounded. So, yeah, I like this little common.
And yeah, no, that's a good way to put it. Yep. And I love the art on the second half where she's just being picked up by the lanterns. She's not having a good time there.
Okay, another transform card. It's Mirror Hall Mimic. Front side is 3 and a blue for a 0/0 spirit. You may have it enter the battlefield as a copy of any creature on the battlefield, except it's a spirit in addition to its other types, and it has disturb for 3 blue-blue. Other side is Ghastly Mimicry. It's an aura, enchants a creature. At the beginning of your upkeep, create a token that's a copy of enchanted creature, except it's a spirit in addition to its other types. If Ghastly Mimicry would be put into a graveyard from anywhere, exile it instead. I keep wanting to say Mimicry. just another, you know, 4-mana clone. It's also a spirit, which may or may not matter in most commander decks, but I run several clones in my Sphinx tribal deck, and I would definitely slot this in there. I don't know if I'd remove a clone or remove a Sphinx, but even on the flip side, if you're enchanting a non-legendary Sphinx and just getting an additional one every turn with Unesh on the battlefield, you're getting that faux factor fiction effect. So yeah, this is just a good old fashioned clone with a little extra utility.
Yeah. And it's nice that they brought back the old templating where it can get any creature on the battlefield.
Yes.
Instead of just like the spark double text, which is only your creatures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, strictly better clone.
Okay, next we have Necro Duality. It's 3 and a blue for an enchantment. Whenever a non-token zombie enters the battlefield under your control, create a token that's a copy of that creature. It's just, I love cards like this.
Yep. Yep. It's what you want for zombies, just doubling up your zombies. Mm-hmm. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
If you have zombies that have solid ETB effects, then getting twice the ETB effects. So
yeah, if we ever go back to Dominaria, I want like this but for slivers. I think that would be good because they're so cheap mostly, and then you just get another one.
But there was that 5-mana like Reflections of Lichyara.
Oh, that's right, yeah, from Kaldheim.
Yeah, and that one you can choose your creature type. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, oh, that's true. It's 5-mana though. 4 is so much nicer.
Well, yeah, 4-mana is better than 5-mana, but...
Next, we have Overcharged Amalgam. It's 2 blue-blue for a 3/3 zombie horror with flash and flying, and it has exploit. So exploit is returning. When this creature enters the battlefield, you may sacrifice a creature, and when Overcharged Amalgam exploits a creature, counter-target spell, activated ability, or triggered ability. So very versatile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And notably for exploit, you can exploit this creature. So you can sacrifice this, mm-hmm. and get that effect. So at its worst, you're just, you know, 4-mana for countering a spell or an ability. So I think it's a pretty solid card through and through. Like if you want a flash flyer, if you care about that, or if you want a zombie that can counter things, like pretty sweet card.
Yeah. I remember back when I first started playing Magic and didn't really understand the game. And I would use counter spells to counter like activated abilities on cards. And because like no one I was playing with understood the game, we were like, oh yeah, that works. So I was like stifling things with just like, you know, double blue classic counter spell. That was fun. Like, is that a spell? And I'm like, I don't know, you're doing something, so I'm gonna counter it.
Yeah.
Patchwork Crawler is next. It's one and a blue for a 1/2 zombie horror. You can pay 2 and a blue to exile target creature card from your graveyard and put a 1/1 counter on Patchwork Crawler. Patchwork Crawler has all activated abilities of all creature cards exiled with it. This kind of reminds me of Necrotic Ooze.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure there's some broken things you can do with this thing.
Oh, I'm sure.
I don't know
but
I'm sure there's some broken combo.
there's probably more than one. Yeah. Scattered Thoughts is next. It's 3 and a blue for an instant. Look at the top 4 cards of your library. Put 2 of those cards into your hand and the rest into your graveyard.
So is this just like a fact or fiction, basically, that you can pick the cards you want?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what it is.
Like... It doesn't hit 5 cards, but you get the 2 cards, the two best cards from those 4 cards. Yeah. So
I think I'd rather have that.
I think if you're playing a deck that's happy playing fact or fiction, Scattered Thoughts is going to be an awesome include in that deck as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice little common. Next we have... It is common.
Why is that common?
I guess they wanted to slow down limited play as much as possible.
Yeah.
Having people choose. Thirst for Discovery is next. It's 2 and a blue for an instant. Draw 3 cards, then discard 2 cards unless you discard a basic land card. So another addition to the Thirst cycle of cards. And I think this one might be the best one in terms of how many decks it can fit into. Because we have the one that cares about artifacts, we have the one that cares about enchantments, and I think that's it. The only downside I can see to this card is that you have to specifically discard a basic land, which could be difficult if you're in multiple colors. But most of the time, when we are drawing cards and discarding cards, we want to keep playables in our hand. So if we can and we don't need them, we are discarding lands. So I think this card is, you know, going to be able to fit into a lot more decks than, what is it, Thirst for Knowledge and Thirst for Meaning.
And then there's another one that's at sorcery speed that basically does this, but it just cares about pitching a land instead of a basic land. But it's sorcery speed. So this is definitely a nice alternative version to that.
Yeah, and I mean, even in thinking of Commander, even in monocolored decks, it's easier to keep that basic land count up, but you know, sometimes you just don't have a basic land in hand. Although if this wasn't a monocolored deck in Commander, it'd have to be mono blue. So I don't know. I guess it just depends how many utility lands you want to run.
I like drawing cards though.
Yeah. Of course. Yeah, even if you have to discard 2 cards, it's not a big deal. It's still instant speed. It's fantastic. Our last blue card today is Winged Portend. It's 1 blue for an instant. It has cleave for 4 green blue. So you draw a card for each creature with flying you control, but if you cast it for its cleave cost, you just draw a card for each creature you control. And now, like, rereading these cards, I'm starting to understand what Riley was talking about earlier. It's kind of stupid.
Yeah. Well, because you have to, I find you have to kind of go back and like, am I adding these in? Am I taking them out? Yeah. Like, what is going on? I guess one shorthand is like you're cleaving off the text, right?
Yeah.
You're chopping it off.
It's probably when they pitched it in the like design meeting. That was like, you're cleaving it off, right? Huh?
Yeah.
So normally a card like this would, you know, go in the win more category for me. It kind of has like a distant melody kind of feel to it. But going back to Lantern Bearer, I could see running this in an Edric or a Flying Men build. Not to use when you're already in the lead. I mean, you could, of course, but more as a response to a board wipe. You know, you're going to lose your board, but you'll fill your hand before you do. And as for the cleave cost... If you can do it, great. it's nice to have that versatility, but I'm really just looking at it from its, you know, just one blue and you know, caring about flyers text.
Yeah. When this card was spoiled, there was a bunch of people that were up at arms about the green in its color identity. There's like a bunch of like Azorius Flyers fans that were like, why is this green?
No. Well, I, if you want to do Flying Man and Canlander, of course you could run this because it doesn't matter that there's a green pip. You just won't be able to cast it unless you have, I mean, you can give yourself access to green in that deck. In any deck, but you know, most of the creatures you're running are flying, so I think it's pretty solid. All right, everybody. Well, with that, we're going to bring this installment of our Crimson Vow set review to a close. We'll be back next week with part two, where we'll cover, at the very least, red and black and red, do the Rakdos part of the color pie. We'd like to thank you for listening. As always, and for tuning back in with us after our short hiatus. I think that was about a month. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. See you around. Bye now.
Bye now.
Get out.